and presentation. Item number four, tabling of petitions. Are there any petitions to table? Any petitions to table? Moving on to item number five, public question comment session. I remind anyone who wishes to speak to please provide your name and your civic address, and you have a maximum of 5 minutes. And please speak at the mic.
Yes, Leon Robertson, College Street in Liverpool, Mayor Norman. That was a very interesting presentation, and it looks good for the project going ahead. It's certainly something we need, and I wish them all the best in their endeavors. The other thing I just want to mention, I noticed from going through the financial statements, I didn't go through them in more detail, but we had quite a surplus, operating surplus last year, did we not?
Yes, we did.
About 3.6 million.
Approximately, we'll go, yeah.
Somewhere in that area, eh? Okay, the other thing is under the, in the information there, about the, what's being done with the articles in the, council implementation report. It shows in there where under the planning that the setback from water courses and so on is now increased to 30 meters, which is almost 100 feet. I was wondering what it was before.
It was 50 feet with the ability to reduce to 25, and it is now 100 feet, which is probably the largest setback that in this province by municipal government, with the ability to have that decreased to 50 feet with proper documentation and study.
It's good to see that because if you drive along the coastline from here through to Port Patoum, and you see the buildings that have gone up there, and they had to put big rocks up and everything to keep them there, and it really destroys our coastline. It's good to see, and hopefully it'll be well before the term will be. Thank you, Mayor.
Very welcome, Mr. Robertson. Anyone else like to speak?
Good morning, thank you. My name is Patty Pike, and I'm from Main Street, Wilton. And we're here from the Queen's Care Society. Susan McLeod and Randy Dinkie are also joining us here today. We're part of Queen's Care Society in the Affordable Housing Committee, and we're working to bring affordable housing to Queens with a spotlight on seniors. But our vision is to see an intergenerational, diverse neighborhood with accessible, efficient, safe homes in a cooperative setting. And we believe that every resident of Queens County has the right to good quality, safe, and affordable housing and a place to call home. This includes the residents of the new long-term care residential care facility. We support the Queens Care Building Society, who are here today to seek the location at Queens Place for their new site. The area provides accessibility to our town and is a vibrant area that enables the residents to be stimulated and involved in our community. The community, the residents, and the employees of the new facility would all benefit from having the facility located at Queens Place.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wish to comment? Hearing, seeing none. Approval of the regular council minutes, July 12th, 2022, moved by Councillor Gidney, seconded by Councillor Hawks. All those in favor? Passed. So recommendations have resulted from either past discussion or in item 7.4 having been presented to the audit committee. So we're going to deal with 7.1 first. You may recall at our last meeting there was discussion regarding the creation of a bylaw for road levy collection for nonprofit associations. The nod was given from the majority of councillors for for staff to investigate this. There is a recommendation within the package. Counselor Brown.
I recommend that the Council of Region of Queens Municipality approve the initiation of the bylaw drafting process that would document the conditions required in order to facilitate collection of road levies by Region of Queens as part of the tax billing process.
Seconded by Counselor Fancy. Ms. Vino, would you like to provide any further information or comments respecting this?
I would like to let council know that I have had at least three inquiries from other home landowners in our region regarding this bylaw and the possibility of doing something like this as part of the tax billing process, and all have been very positive.
Any questions of Ms. Vino or any comments before I ask the question? Councillor Brown.
My district is one with probably the most of the lot owners associations, so I've heard from a number of them as well, and I'll be talking to some of their boards of directors in the next week or so to discuss some of the issues that come up with it to get them on board. So just wanted to put that out.
Thank you. Any other further comments or questions? No comments or questions? If not, I'm going to ask for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Passed. Carried. SoSure Regional Hospital Foundation Brighter Days Capital Campaign Funding. You will recall June 14th. SoSure Regional co-chairs came explaining the bill that they're doing to the regional hospital, which is a benefit to all residents in the SoSure as it provides larger ER capacity, larger an MRI suite, which is being funded primarily by the Queens General Hospital Foundation, and the benefits to that. At our last meeting, the discussion was to move ahead, so there is a recommendation. Councillor Charlton.
I move that Council of Region of Queens Municipality approve a donation of $100,000 to the SoSure Regional Hospital Foundation Brighter Days Campaign to be funded directly from the Special Operating Reserve in the 2022-2023 budget year.
And that is seconded by Councillor Romero. Anything you wish to add to this, Ms. Vino? Are there any questions or comments? Councillor Fancy?
I see where they're coming from and what they're doing. And again, it's always still a concern to me with Liverpool Hospital, where we are. And I'm working up around there, and I see things happen over the years. So I'm scared of how things are going to be affected by us. But actually, we need the growth. But I still think it's we should be doing the $25,000 per. That's going to $100,000.
And the motion is $100,000 in the next year out of the Special Operating Reserve. Are there any other comments? Deputy Mayor Muse?
I'm against this. I've been getting calls every weekend about our ER and our hospital being down. I don't think this is going to help our ER at all. I think it's going to make it worse. And I think the $100,000 that we're giving to this hospital should be going to our own hospital and try to help in the ER.
Any other comments? Councillor Charlton?
I think there's sort of two issues here. I know our hospital foundation is hopeful that we will support this request. Our emergency, Queens Merge is closed a lot, but I think they're two separate issues. So I think, you know, when you look at enhancing things in the community, that brings doctors and new healthcare workers here. And we haven't had a specific ask from our local hospital, except that they help to support this. So I think in the reality, our hospital is going to continue to close for a bit, off and on, until they can fill those staff shortages. But when it's closed, our residents could sit down with Al Bissette and other members from the Queens Hospital Foundation, ask how we as a region can be, we'll be doing other things to help. But I think a lot of those things, you know, they just, they're in progress, they're just going to take time, is what I mean.
Thank you. Councilor Brown?
I think there was some discussion about how this would affect our local hospital, and I contacted Al Bissette, and he was very, very forthcoming that he wanted us to support this initiative because he thought it was very important to the South Shore. It's our regional hospital, it's one of the last ones that doesn't have an MRI. There's services that are not provided at this regional hospital that our residents have to travel to Yarmouth or Kentville or Halifax to do, and I think it's very important that we do this. And I am in favor of the 100,000 from our reserves because I don't want to see us saddle a next council with a potential of $25,000 every year because we don't know what the future is going to bring. And I think we're probably in a better shape now than we may be in 3 or 4 years' time. So that's my feelings.
Any other comments? Councilor Romero?
I agree with Councilor Charlton. I do think after this, I do agree with the 100,000 as well, but I do think that we should definitely sit down and see what else we can do to help our local hospital as well, as a council.
Any other comments? Deputy Mayor Muse, would you assume the chair, please? I also agree with this recommendation for the matters that both Councilor Charlton and Councilor Brown cited. After the conversation with Councilor Brown between he and Al Bissette, you will recall that we were encouraged to write a letter supporting the Queens General Foundation's purchase of a CT machine, which will make Queens General more attractive to young recruits who see that as a regular part of being at a hospital. The foundation has not asked us for money, and when the foundation does want money, historically in the past, they have come to council and ask. And I believe Councillor Charlton was very point on when she said the two issues are not related. We could provide $1 million to Queens General and it is not going to help with the ER closures. They have a staffing issue that they are working on. We've seen the reports. They have a new doctor coming. They're hoping to have another one in January. They are working on the recruitment. I noticed yesterday in the CBC News, major hospitals in Toronto and Montreal are closing their ERs. This is a phenomenon that is going across our country, and I don't think we should be confusing the two issues, and I really advise everyone to vote for this. South Shore Regional is our hospital. It is our regional hospital, and an MRI suite there is essential. It is our hospital. It may not be in our community, but it is our hospital too, so. That's it.
Councilor Vance.
And I understand all these things too, and of course, working down there, some to that the hospital, I understand with the emerge where everything's going and people waiting up in the hallways, this will probably be four times as big when it's over with. That'll give you more room for space, but that doesn't change the situation. The situation isn't going to change until the doctors and nurses we could be able to get those recruited or get them recruited and be able to use them, I guess, in the merge and such as, because that's where the shortage is. So, yes, making this bigger is going to be so much better for people to be able to go in and go into a room. It isn't going to change anything, though, because we still have the same problem. The same problem exists. But again, we've got things we're going forward with, even housing and such as, that's a lot of money that I hope we don't come up short on different things we want to do for the years to come. Anyway, that's my thoughts.
Councilor Gidney?
I believe we're losing a bit of focus here. The
this is the Social Regional Hospital Foundation. It's got nothing to do with Queens, or it does have something to do with Queens, because we can still go there. But it's to help them increase what they have there, which will benefit us immensely, then there's no question about that. The problems that we have here, that as it has been addressed, are problems that we have here, and this is something that's gonna be addressed separately. This is a separate issue altogether, and I think it's very timely to get that things going there, so that it's gonna benefit us in the long run. Thank you.
Any other councilors? Okay, all those in favor of the motion? Opposed? Carried.
7.3. Town Hall Arts and Cultural Center Accessibility Renovations. Again, this was several meetings of discussion, and we've reached the point where we are ready for a recommendation, if someone would so make this recommendation, Councilor Gidley?
I recommend that the council read for Queens Municipality approve the installation of a new barrier-free access ramp and building entry on the eastern side of Town Hall Arts and Cultural Center, RVC side, to meet the accessibility needs of users of the facility.
Thank you, and seconded by Councilor Fancy. Mr. McLeod, is there anything else that we need to know or you wish to add?
I don't believe so, Mayor Norman, I think it's been, like you said, discussed several times. The exterior ramp entry in the current building and the RVC, has been discussed at both the staff level and the Accessibility Advisory Committee level. This is the most appropriate location for the ramp, and we'd like to see this move forward and the construction to be completed.
Thank you. Questions of Mr. McLeod? Deputy Mayor Muse?
So, I'm a little lost. How much is it gonna cost to build the ramp? Like, I see that $76,000 leaves a balance. Is that after the ramp is built, or is that all that we have to go towards the ramp?
That should be sufficient as we look at the approximate cost of construction. That should be sufficient funds to cover the cost of the ramp.
That will.
An exterior ramp, not enclosed.
That's how much money we have before we build it in that accessibility budget line for the town hall.
But it doesn't, in the recommendation, I'm lost, it doesn't say that the ramp cost will be $76,000. We don't have an estimate on how much it will cost?
Earlier estimates, $55,000 to $60,000. So we have sufficient funds in the current budget to cover the cost of construction.
Any other questions? Councilor Gidley?
Yeah, I'd just like to note that in the correspondence that we had from the amphitheater, there's a couple points that haven't been addressed at this point.
Right.
And I just wanted to bring that to attention, that would be something we'll be looking at a more opportune time, which would be the snow removal, maybe a heated mats for the ramp, et cetera, et cetera. Great, thank you.
That's right, and those issues we should deal with sooner than later, as they are winter issues.
Yes.
So, yes. Any other comments or questions? Now I'm gonna ask for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Passed. Last evening, our auditors presented the audit financial statements to the Audit and Internal Control Committee. I suspect Councilor Brown, your chair of that committee, would you like to make the recommendation?
I recommend that the Council of Region of Queens Municipality adopt the audited financial statements for the fiscal year ended March 31st, 2022.
And that's seconded by Councilor Charlton, who also serves on that committee.
So
the floor is yours, Ms. Vino.
Council will see these. I put these on your desk. There was a change to the first line of sheet B1. All it was a reallocation of netting
school boards and to the RCMP for corrections. So basically, it was just reallocating so that this would agree the budget note in the back. It was something that Kelsey from Grant Thornton had asked me to do. So I did it, but you guys had already had my drafts. We went through, we had a special meeting of the audit committee on July the 8th where we went through the financials page by page, section by section, and there was no outstanding matters that were not addressed. There were a couple of note changes that I made in the wording. After that meeting, Grant Thornton got our drafts. There was a couple of formatting issues that Kelsey wanted changed, and the budget note being one, she discussed that last night at the meeting. They will still remain in draft form until Grant Thornton receives one legal letter that they're waiting for. But other than that, they don't anticipate any issues. Further to the discussion Mr. Robertson raised about the deficit, we talked about that in our budget meetings when we had our budget week meetings up in Caledonia at the fire hall. The big contributors were double the municipal grants, so that was an extra $1.2 million. We doubled our Canada Community Building Fund revenue, that was $680,000. We had the $300,000 that was a result of our pension surplus because we finally wrapped up that transfer. And of course, we had the de-transfer tax that was close to $1 million over budget for the year.
That was for surplus, Joanne, not a deficit.
So did I say deficit? Oh, God. It was surplus. Sorry. So if you add all those up, you get pretty close to 3.4. There were some operational savings during the year, but unfortunately, they came at the expense of lack of staff. So, you know, we don't really keep, that's not really a positive thing in some respects. And we also had some increased costs with utilities and supplies because of the supply chain issues. So those kind of, you know, netted each other out. And if any of you counselors have any specific questions about anything on the financials, my door is always open. So you can always come down and ask me whatever you'd like, because I'm an open book. We have the added note in the consolidated statements that breaks out all reserve balances, because I know there's been a lot of discussion about reserves and what they're for. I'm not going to get into the specifics of each of them. I think they're named appropriately, but if you have any questions at all, my door is always open. Does anyone have any questions now?
Any questions that are at the top of people's mind? Councilor Gibney? Yes.
I've reviewed this, and it appears to be exactly what we have discussed previously, and I'm very impressed with everything that's going on. Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Councilor.
Thank you for your job.
I have a great team, so I'm very lucky.
Councilor Brown?
When Kelsey gave the presentation yesterday, one of the things that she said was this is the easiest audit that she's gone through, so I want to give a shout out to staff for doing a great job on this. And the other thing she said was that with a new rule that's coming into place, the PSAS for the asset retirement and the landfill, that we are farther ahead than most other jurisdictions in getting that in place. So that's another good step, because that has to be done by the end of this year. And it's not a small project. So
it's not. Councillor Brown is correct. And I will be using the great people on my audit and internal control committee as a sounding board while I go through that process and keeping them up to date, because they all have really different perspectives than I. So I'll be relying on them for their opinions while we go through the process. And Kelsey at Grant Thornton is also there to support us through it. So I think we'll be okay. We'll have everything done. It may not, we'll have to wait and see what results we get.
No other questions? If not, I'm going to ask for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Thank you. Under discussions, Ms. Plummer, Manager of Finance, another outstanding member who is just finding us those tax sale revenues.
As you all know, we had our tax sale July 18th. We had to have it at the Best Western because we have outgrown having them here in the council chambers. Originally, and as the report says, all of the properties were sold, which was that, so they are currently at our lawyer right now doing the title search. And then we'll make sure we have another tax sale sometime in January or February.
And these properties that we tax sale were all land?
Yes.
These present ones are all land?
Yes, for the July tax sale, yes.
At a, and you didn't say the sum for our viewing audience?
What's that?
The sum of the sales?
Yes.
I don't think you stated it for our viewing audience.
Oh.
I always am conscious of people who are watching
Right.
who do not have agendas.
Okay, so with the adjustment from the one property that didn't sell, the opening bid, so we cleared $46,000 from our receivables, and there will be $250,000 going to the tax sale surplus, which I will see in 20 years' time. I'll be able to make the transfer into our general capital fund.
Our CEO says we're starting to get more uptake on people are now realizing they can come back and collect the monies made
so
outside.
We did have that happened for the April tax sale. There were several properties sold to one owner, and the owner came forward just actually, I think it was June 30th that transfer went through. It was over $300,000 in surplus money. But they went through the process. They paid the legal fees. They did everything that they had to do. So.
And we get the taxes off paid that are outstanding.
Yes, absolutely.
Deputy Mayor Muse?
But you said that this time it doesn't happen.
Yes, it does.
Over 6 years?
That can still happen. So if they're over 6 years, then the owner is not able to come back and redeem the property. So if the property was only 3 years outstanding, I would have 6 months to come forward with the money to pay off my property. With this case, when it's in the tax sale surplus account, we have to hold it there for 20 years. And then anybody with an interest in the property can apply to the courts to get the surplus.
Any other questions? That's it. There's no recommendations. It's just a discussion,
so
an information point, Councilor Gidney.
How many notices were sent for tax sale in November?
60.
60?
60, yes.
Councilor Brown?
I think it's great that it's starting to clear this up and get the tax revenues back where they should be.
And if you read your financial statements and saw note 2, you'll see that the taxes receivable are down
they're way down.
$100,000 from the previous year.
That's a lot of work. Thank you.
Yes.
Any other comments? I thank you. It's always great information that we like to hear. 8.2 is the council implementation report. Are there any items in the implementation report? Anyone has any questions respecting? If not, Ms. Vina was coming back to do our financial review of Q1.
Report for you and also for the audit and internal control committee. Let's start with the revenue analysis here. I'm going to just pull my statements out so I have them on the other side of me. So I'm not going to go through everything line by line. What I do is I just highlight for you the things that are odd or different. So one of the things that we do, because we have a utility, is the UARB sets a rate that we can charge for fire hydrants. Or the utility gets us revenue for fire hydrants, whichever way you want to look at it. And so this has to be applied as a cent on the tax rate or a number of cents on the tax rate. So with rounding, because we can't charge 0.469 of a cent, when you look at the particular
Protective Services under hydrants, you'll see that it is $200,178. Okay? Excuse me. And then the budget is $196,427. And the difference is just because of rounding. So what we'll do is we'll transfer that over to the utility at the end of the year. So worry not. We're on it. Deed transfer tax continues to outpace budget. Quarter one of last year was $400,156. This year it's $396.80. So that's really not the drop we were anticipating. A decline of almost 50% was anticipated and budgeted for. So far this year, we have not seen a significant decline. It should be noted that in Q1 of 21-22, the deed transfer tax was 1%, not 1.5 as we are collecting now, right? So they're not going to be apples to apples until quarter two. Nova Scotia Power Corporation is actually higher than budget. This is money that we receive. It's not something that we can, you know, estimate. It depends on what the budget allocates for us. And so because real estate and deed transfer tax is such a big deal for us, I went and did some poking around in the numbers just to see where we were. So the total number of sales were down about 30%. Total sales value was down. But again, you have to remember our deed transfer tax went up by 0.5, like basically 50%. So our deed transfer tax still stable. So average sale value was 141 up to 157. Sales by district still show strong sales for District 9 and 10, which of course we saw last year. Sales prices are consistently over assessed value, averaging 68% over this year versus 63.5 last year. And I thought, okay, well, all the houses must be sold by now, so we must just be selling land. So I went in and did some analysis on that, and nope. Last year, the lots we sold with dwellings represented about 50%, and it's the same this year. So we're still selling lots with land, lots with houses on it. Now I gave the little graph here so that you could all see like numbers on a district by district basis. And then I have all those numbers kind of graphed in the subsequent pages just as an illustration. So it's the same information just displayed graphically. The other thing in revenue that I thought was important to note is that licenses and permits are almost at 50% of budget, and the main contributor is building permits. The revenue is at 48% of budget already, and that's the end of the first quarter. So that will tell you really in dollars and cents what you've been hearing from Director McLeod, that we are very, very busy down there in building inspections. Section 9. I just went over some of the things that were asked last year, what the travel council was, what other legislative is. Taxation, if you remember when we budget, when we were up in North Queens talking about our budgets and talking about what we can do for low-income people in the region, we increased the LICO, which is low-income cutoff, to qualify for our property taxes, so that would give more people the ability to apply. And we also raised the amount from $250 to $300. So that has been really strong. So that really worked. We had more participation in that program, which is great. Protective services, firefighting force is more than 25%, because remember when we do the budget percentages, we do it for what we've spent this year versus the budget for the whole year. So you think it was 25% for the first quarter, but this 50% because we pay 50% of the grants in the first quarter, not 25. Liability insurance for the fire department was also more than we anticipated. Transportation services, small tools and equipment included safety gear, and $11,000 was invested in safety shoes for our staff for this quarter, which was an absolutely necessary expense. Environmental services, now this is the one I have included this page. Well, you can take this out, you should have this at the end. So there was an addition, a formula error made during the budget process where this $109,000 was included twice. So in essence, what that meant was that we budgeted $109,000 more in expenditures than we actually had because it was a formula error. So
We discovered this when the June statements were done using the new format that we designed in the last year, because the new format has checks and balances that pull these things out. So I'd say I've attached a copy of the relevant page in the budget. I just added a line so that it wouldn't affect our surplus, our small surplus at the end of the year. And if we go on to the next paragraph before everyone gets so excited, the garbage and waste collection, we are looking at a significant fuel surcharge this year. When the contract was negotiated, it was negotiated around a base price of 89.64 cents per liter of gas, and all of you understand that the gas is significantly higher than that. So what happens if the gas goes 10% above or 10% below is that there's a fuel surcharge or rebate. So if it goes 10% below, like it did when COVID first was about, we got a couple of thousand dollars, it wasn't really a lot, but now it's significantly above the 10%. So we anticipate, at this time I did this report, we anticipate that it will be over $150,000 this fiscal year. I'm hopeful that will still be the case because I see gas prices coming down. So how that works is the controller at GE sends us a list of all the mileage that they use and the truck literage that they use, and we compare it to the UARB average rate. And then I check, it's not like they send me a bill and we pay it. We recalculate it to make sure that everything is kosher with that, which is very important considering it's going to be a significant amount of money for us this year.
When, is that done month?
Month, yeah, every month, yeah. And there was a small amount, I don't know if you remember, there was a small amount, I think, of $35,000 or $40,000 that we accrued back to last year because they actually started charging it in March, but we didn't know until May. So I actually accrued some of it back to last year because it was last year's expense, so that was all done correctly. Section 14, Environmental Development Services. Other costs here are for accessibility projects completed. This looks over budget because the revenue is recognized in Section 7. So you remember we talked at the end of the year about not being able to complete some of the accessibility projects that we had. So I moved the revenue to deferred revenue. So now I brought the revenue back in. So it's in Section 7 as revenue, but the costs still have to remain down here in the cost. So we're good. Tourism and Economic Development includes the Liverpool Business Development Center, and there were unbudgeted expenses of over $40,000 this quarter due to a fire in the building. That was the sprinkler pump fire that Director Grant sent you all a memo about, just to give you the heads up. Our building inspector wanted a fire watch person put on there until that was all inspected and fixed, which also cost us money, but it was absolutely necessary because it was a safety issue for the building. Recreation and Cultural Services, Parks and Playgrounds includes one-time purchase of a used truck. That was in the budget. We talked about that when we did the budget process. There were all budgeted transfers have been done. In summary, the issue of most concern is the fuel surcharge, as I've talked about. We budgeted for a 20% increase. We're not even close to that right now. But hopefully, if the gas starts coming down, we should be fine. We're all cross our fingers. Any forecasted impact on budget will be included in the staff report, so I've discussed that, and then this report will be included in the meeting minutes.
Thank you. Questions for Ms. Vina? I think we're all sitting. We're doing okay except for the fuel.
Yep.
And there's not much we can control.
No, unfortunately there is not.
Again, I just want to commend accounting. This is amazing. I love the presentation. I love the reports. And it makes it really easy to follow.
Good,
and
I'm glad.
I appreciate bringing it to us. Thank you.
That means I'm doing my job.
Councillor Brown?
I'd like to echo what Councillor Gidney said. It's been an organic process where you've been changing the reports to give us what we need. And I know when you present it to us on the Audit and Internal Control Committee the day before, and then we get it again today, reading it twice and hearing the presentation twice makes it sink in a lot easier. So it's great to, I like having it twice.
Well, that's good. Yeah. It's good to know. And there are still some tweaks. I know that Councillor Charlton had asked that we break out, because in the financials, if you look at our, I'm just looking for the page, for the recreation, oh no, here we go. So if we look at section 14 under environmental development services, tourism and economic development is all blobbed. I don't like blobs. I didn't know if there was a reason that everything was blobbed, but Councilor Charlton and I discussed it. And what I'll do is next time when we had our quarterly, I will break that out a little bit more. So you'll have tourism and then you'll have, you know, the economic development, because I think those, while they're very interdependent, I think it's important for council to see the differences.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if there's any other things that you'd like tweaked, my door is always open. These are made in Excel, so they can be tweaked whichever way you like. You are the user.
And I think it makes it easier where we're not all deep financial people, that it breaks it down into simpler terms for us to understand.
Again, another discussion item for information purposes. Mr. Levy, Municipal Clerk and Diversity Coordinator, who was tasked with reviewing municipal policies and bylaws. He's worked with a committee. Councilor Romero, you were on that committee.
I was.
And who was the other councilor? Councilor Gidney? And then you had three staff members on the committee, and you met five times. I attended one and realized you were all in good, capable hands, and I'd wait until we have them all in front of us. So, Mr. Levy, how do you wish to proceed with this? They will have to be adopted at some point in time. Next meeting or the meeting later, or will that be a will of council as to when they want to adopt them? How do you wish to proceed with this?
Well, I think as to start out, since I put these on the council agenda, I have found some things that I think should be brought to your attention as
okay.
It impacts some of the meetings. So I'll go through some of those first. I have had some on council come and speak to me individually about questions. I'll bring those to the forefront to keep you all up to date. And then from there, I would just, I'll take comments and try to field questions the best I can. And if there's anything I can't answer directly today, then I'll surely get back to you. And sort of to Director Vino's point earlier, I'm always available in my office if things come up between now and the time a recommendation is put forward for adoption to go over anything. So,
do you want to let us then know the changes on the drafts that you've noted?
Yeah, so that's why I have all these little wings on my papers here. So, I'll start.
Page number
first. So, if we look at page 15, the proposed employment equity policy, there are two changes that I'm intending to make. So. Section 3E, the definition of representation in a previous policy, policy 1.02, there is a definition of representative. For consistency's sake, I would replace the definition on page 15 with the definition on page 8. The definition on page 8 is clearer and more detailed.
Everyone clear with that?
Also on page 15, section 5, it reads from the groups outlined in section 3, that's an error that should read section 4 to refer back to the designated groups.
Can I just bring up something
of
also
course.
While you're in that spot?
Yep.
We had made an addition there in section 4 under recruitment. Should be African American added to that? That was never added.
Okay. So,
yeah. So that would have been F. For F.
Okay, thank you for that. Go ahead to page 24. employed by the municipality, the position, and dates of employment. So that outlines the extent of what information the region would provide about staff in a reference check, and there were some concerns over some of the wording there. So that can be a discussion point. I have no specific insights into what to change. That would be at the will of council.
If I could, I did bring that forward because I questioned why we would only disclose that information. And my answer was, often it's just basically good to disclose that yes, they were employed, the position, the dates. If asked, would you hire them again, yes or no? But to get into people's personnel files on a reference check, to disclose information that would be in a personnel file, or often someone can be very objective, or I guess the word would be subjective, in that if they really like the person who had been here, they may give them a great glowing, and it's becoming a legal matter regarding providing how much information you provide on reference checks. So we're better off perhaps just to provide basic information rather than...
I mean, in terms of referring to personnel policies, there are confidentiality issues around that. Many reference checks go into a person's character and the quality of their work and things like that. And you're correct. Those things are subjective. The whole reference check process is a subjective part of recruitment. So the extent to which the region wants to be involved in that subjectivity for current or past staff when they are seeking a new position is something that has been a discussion, and at the end of all the discussions with the review committee and the management and the review of the research, this is what was put in the policy. So any deviations from that is up to council to consider and discuss.
But I'm fine with it.
Yeah.
Having understood the reasoning why.
So if we flip ahead to page 48, which is the proposed corrective action policy, under section 11, investigation and documentation, where in the first line it refers to section 3, that should read section 2. And then the last point that I have is at page 96, section 4B, where it says 100% of employee costs for health coverage up to age 65 years following the terms outlined in section A. That should read section 4A, just for consistent terminology. Those were the things that were brought forward to me that, or that I noticed that had impact over the potential implementation and management of the policy.
So are there any questions of Mr. Levy respecting these new policies? Deputy Mayor Muse.
Page 19, number 13. Legally, can we do that?
Which section? I
14, really. I guess it's more or less it's saying that personal relationships, you couldn't hire them in the same department. And
right, so it's a common practice in many workplaces to discourage having family members within the same work unit if possible. So as this reads, it would be something that is discouraged, and in the recruitment process, if somebody is in that situation and say they are involved in the selection of interview candidates or interviews themselves, they may be asked to excuse themselves as to not create a conflict of interest and show bias in our recruitment processes. So I think the wording there is really careful that it's discouraged, and also that the staff member that's currently here would excuse himself from the process. I've seen this
I just wanna say that, in my former life working at Bowwater, I went through that because I worked in the same department with my father, and they split us up on different shifts. We were not allowed to work on the same shift, and we had brothers working in the same department who were not allowed to work on the same shift, so I'm kind of familiar with how that works and the reasoning behind it.
Other questions or comments? Councilor Romero?
Just from the package that we were given, to go over last time, Eric, I noticed that there's three missing, and I'm not sure why. One of them was court leave, and I don't know if that's covered under the labor standard code or not.
Yeah, it is. So some policies that we went over have been removed because essentially they were a bit redundant. So some leaves, like court leave, is legislated in the labor standards code, so to have it in our own policies when it's already legislated is more of an information piece, so it was just removed.
Okay, and the other two that I noticed was the computer purchase program and the donation in the memorial.
So the computer purchase program was discussed amongst the directors, and it was indicated that there was sort of a slowing down of that program being used. Also, the overall cost of computers, tablets, laptops has become much more affordable than it was when that policy was put in place. So say, for instance, I think the original policy might have been from the year 2000, where a tablet could have been upward of $1,000, but now you can get a tablet for $129. So affordability of technology has changed as well, and with those considerations, that policy was taken out of the package.
So can we maybe consider this and maybe put a cap on it, or?
You mean like to put the policy back in and then cap the borrow? I mean, that is something that we could definitely look at and discuss if you'd like me to bring that back.
CAO McNeil wishes to comment on that.
Just about, because I was around way back when this all started. A computer was $3,000 way back when this was all put in place, and so and the average salary of a municipal employee back then was probably about $30,000. So it was a substantial amount of money, 10% of wages. So we're at a point now where if somebody wants to go buy a laptop or buy a cell phones weren't considered in the past, but of course now they're more prevalent than computers in many cases. You can buy them for a few hundred dollars, and the question come up, but is it appropriate for us to loan taxpayers money, essentially be the bank for staff to buy a laptop for $300 or $400, or to buy a cell phone and buy the most expensive one for $1,000 or $1,500? And then what has happened in the past is, so we're loaning it, we're being a finance year for staff, which becomes a taxable benefit on their income tax. But also in the past, we've had people leave, and then we have no way of recouping the money back. We're not legally allowed to garnish their wages, their last paycheck, or anything like that. We've entered into a contract with them, and if they leave, then we end up getting stuck with the bill. And so, as we talked about it with staff, because the costs are so minor now, you can buy a cell phone now for essentially zero and just pay the monthly payment, and you can buy a laptop or a tablet for a few hundred dollars now, and so the cost shouldn't be a burdensome for our staff, that they need us to be able to be the banker for.
Do you want to, does that make sense when you look at it from that point of view? So do you want to withdraw your suggestion to revisit?
I can, yeah. I just actually wanted just some
clarification
why these
good.
Two were removed. That's all.
Okay.
I just didn't
good.
See them in this new agenda.
I think there was one more you mentioned.
Yeah, it was donation in memoriam.
Donation in memoriam. So I think the discussion around that was currently the mayor does send a card in memoriam for public or family members. And then also just the challenges in tracking that and finding out who and where does the request come from, the high likelihood of missing somebody. And so to find ways to mark those things in different ways. There's just a high
exceeds 3 days. So is that, I was under the impression that employers couldn't ask for doctor notes, so I was just a little bit confused about that, looking for some clarification there.
No, to my understanding, employers can still ask for doctor's notes. It's just it had become such a common thing that employers were asking for every sick day that it's become something that's discouraged. So in my experiences when I was teaching in Halifax, we had students who were going to the clinic multiple times a week and taking up resource time of doctors to get notes. And so it's become a practice that's discouraged. So that's why it's after 3 days. So if somebody is taking a chunk of sick time 3 days in a row, then we have the rights and ability to ask for more details. And that feeds into ways that we could potentially look at, if it's requested, how could we accommodate that staff if they are having issues. And so, discouraged but not disallowed. And so that's why we put in the 3 days, so we're not.
Okay, so I'm just concerned about that, given we talked about how often our hospital closes, and so for the ability of someone to be able to get that, because there are a lot of people that don't even have family doctors. So if you're sick and if it's your supervisor, I guess, that requests the note, is it putting too much pressure on the staff, is what I'm concerned about.
Potentially, and this is where individual words become really important in policy. So the policy states a medical certificate may be required. So that would allow for individual supervisors or the management team to take into consideration sort of what's happening in the world and if that's a reasonable request to ask somebody at that time. So by having May in there, we can really boil things down to circumstance and make the calls from there.
Okay, thanks, Eric.
Yeah, sure.
Councillor Gidney, did I see your hand up?
Sorry.
Did you have your...
Yes, I was just going to bring up the point. May.
Thank you. Any other... One thing I had spoken to was on page 19, the chosen family. We didn't have chosen family in for number page 19, line 15. In a situation where the director becomes aware that a family member or a person from a household of a family member or chosen family, because we do recognize what is new in these documents is that we now recognize chosen family. All of our past HR documents only recognized immediate family, spouse, whatever. We now recognize a chosen family. And I was reminded of that when a note came through my email from a church group who were seeking a home of a young teenager who was unable to live with his parents anymore, and they were seeking a home for him so he could stay and be part of the community. So sometimes a chosen family would be, you know, you're not legally adopted someone, they're not related, but you're their chosen family for a period of time. So I like to commend these documents on that. I like to commend them on all the forward thinking and recruitment and inclusiveness and gender neutrality. I think these documents are so reflective of 2022. And the committee, I thank you, Councillor Gidney, and you, Councillor Charlton. I know the meeting I attended, it was long.
Councillor
Mayor Omen. Who did I look at and what did I call her?
Charlton.
Did I call you Councillor Charlton? Anyway, you know her now. But I commend the committee on this. It was, I think they're excellent, excellent, up to date. And some of these haven't been updated for...
The average was 22 years old.
22
for
years
HR policies.
For HR policies. So, Councillor Charlton.
You need someone to move this to...
Yes, we need to make a recommendation for...
I'll move to have this come forward at our next council meeting with the recommendation pending the changes and additions.
And seconded by Councillor Amaro. Any further discussion? Not, I'll ask for a question. All those in favor?
All right, thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Mr. McLeod. all know, we have a policy regarding the naming of private roads, and there is, maybe just discuss it first, and then we can make a recommendation to move it ahead, if council so chooses.
Yeah, we've received a request to name, I currently unnamed right away, off Highway 331 in Eastport Medway. The first, first name choice that was submitted by the petitioner was Cahoon Lane. The ownership of the right away is unknown, so under the region's policy for naming and renaming roads, it requires the 70% people of own land abutting the right away to consent to this name. So letters were sent out by staff to all owners of property along this right away, and we did achieve 70% of support for the renaming of the road. So the name Cahoon Lane is acceptable under the planning department's regulations, as no current name or similar name exists within the road listing for Queens Town. The rename is in line with the current policy.
Any questions of Mr. McLeod? Someone want to reference that we move this forward? Councilor Brown?
I move that we bring this back at the next council meeting as a recommendation to rename the road Cahoon Road.
And that's seconded by Councilor Charlton. Any further discussion?
Cahoon Lane. Thanks.
All those in favor? Contrary? And last on our public committee, and Mr. McLeod will stay with us, is a slight increase in fees for planning services. And even though we heard that our quarter, we're up in our permitting, and these are not the same lines, these are fees that we charge for color mappings and such. I actually wrote on my document, too cheap. However, Mr. McLeod?
Yeah, under policy 7, we do have our council has a policy respecting fees that are applied to certain services provided by the department. Those include amendments to planning documents, applications for development permits, subdivision applications, that sort of thing. As Mayor Norman referenced, too cheap, but I guess the intent of these is not as a revenue generating means. It's more to offset some of the costs associated with providing these services. The current policy was adopted or approved back in 2011, so things certainly have changed over the last 11 years. So attached to the staff report is, I guess, is a highlighted copy of the fees for planning services policy. The changes are underlined. Some of the, I guess, the most significant changes under section 7.02. Under current policy, it incorporates amendments to planning documents as well as development agreement applications at $700. I am breaking that out from the amendments and the development agreement process. Under both are all of these processes is essentially a deposit that the applicant pays essentially to cover the cost of the advertising and the requirements under the MGA. So anything that's left over from that deposit goes back. But if the fee is not sufficient to cover the cost associated, then the applicant is responsible for that outstanding balance. So with the cost of advertising, obviously over the last number of years, that has increased. So for amendments to the planning documents, I'm suggesting a slight increase in that. I think it's a lot easier to get the money up front than after the process is completed back to them and say we require additional funds. So 7.03 is a new section which addresses development agreements.
development agreements, their that process differs a little bit in that there's certain these legal fees that are incorporated under that as far as preparing notification for recording development agreements at the land registration office, and then with the registering the development agreements at the registry. So it suggested that be $850. I found the last number of development agreements we've done, the $700 didn't cover the costs, and we ended up going back to the applicants. Some minor changes under 7.07 at the bottom of page 1. Applications for variance, currently it's $10. I'm suggesting that be increased to $25. As part of the variance process, we're required to do a mail out to property owners within a specific distance. In most cases, the $10 is cost, or cover the cost of postage for that. So I'm suggesting that we increase slightly. 7.08 on the top of page 2. Under our new planning documents, site plan approval is in the process, which our planning tool that we provided for under the new documents that wasn't there previously. It's similar to a variance request, or suggesting a $25 application fee for that. Fees for planning documents, he said at a straight to $25. I guess at the bottom of that page 7.17 is just that nobody uses compact discs anymore as far as the mapping, so so we're suggesting that just needed to remove that reference, and everybody has their own personal storage, like thumb drives or whatever. So that's the means for providing that service. And on page 3, the 7.17, I'm suggesting that section be removed. I guess letters are written when necessary for the various processes. But not everything requires a municipality to send a letter outlining the process, like a development permit. For instance, you don't send a letter. I guess their approvals are within the approved permit. So that, I guess that section is not really necessary under the fees for the land service as well.
Questions of Mr. McLeod? Councilor Brown?
The fees that you're suggesting here, are these just to cover mostly physical costs, and do they take into consideration like staff time that's involved in the processing of them, or?
Not greatly. They don't.
Okay.
In most cases, they don't cover the costs of providing those services. However, when you look at like permit applications, I guess we look at trying not to discourage. I know like development permits, for example, is $10. That's an extremely low as compared to the cost of providing those services, but at the cost of discouraging development, I guess we chose to keep the cost low.
I guess we could argue that the cost of providing that services is in the tax bill when they do it. So okay, that makes
exactly
sense.
So
yeah.
There are a few municipalities that don't charge for some of that, but the majority charge significantly more than we are.
Okay, thanks.
Any other council questions, Councilor Charlton?
I was thinking there on the page 3, removing that part makes sense because if someone's gotten to the point that they've got to the payment of the fee, then they would be aware of the process of rezoning, and they would know what to expect.
Exactly, right. And I guess when you look at amendments to the planning documents, that's part of the process prior to moving forward, is actually sit down and have discussions with the applicant, so they know when they're
questions? Not, are we ready to move these forward for recommendation of acceptance at the next meeting?
Yes, I recommend that we move it to our next meeting for recommendation.
Moved by Counselor Gibney, seconded by Counselor Romero, all those in favor? Passed. And on that note, we need a motion to move in camera. Moved by Counselor Gibney, seconded by Counselor Romero, all those in favor? Few minute break and then we're going to resume. Right, there are two motions added to the agenda as a result of in-camera discussions. Number 9.1. Counselor Fancy, do you wish to make that motion?
Okay, I so move that the Council of the Region of Queens Municipality declare properties identified as VID numbers 7007-7698, 7007-7722, and 7007-7680 as surplus to municipal needs and enter into a purchase and sale agreement Eric and Don Fry to convey the municipal lands for the appraised value of $95,000.
And that's seconded by Counselor Gibney. And just as a background information before I ask for comments, questions from council, we were approached many months ago respecting municipal lands that could be available for housing. Within this, the PID numbers that Councillor Fancy referred to are commonly known as the Gorica property, vacant land sitting at the first bridge in Milton on Route 8. Council felt that this was surplus land. We have beautiful other parks in the Milton area. Council understands the need for housing within Queens. And so this is the land we're talking about. It has been appraised by an independent appraiser. So that's my introduction to this motion. And if members of council have something they would like to speak on this matter, please do so. Councillor Charlton.
I'm just looking forward to seeing more housing. We need all types of housing, and it's great to see developers interested in things again.
Thank you. Councillor Fancy.
Well, I guess since it's in our district, it'd be other people, and we've thought of different things over the years, what we'd like to have there, and probably back 2 years ago, it would have been different than it is today. But today, the housing situation is critical, and to not look at a developer who wants to develop and make housing for our community would be a short sight on our behalf.
Any other comments? Not, I'm going to ask for the motion. All those in favor? Contrary? Unanimous. Another item, 9.2, also deals with the sale of municipal land. I believe Councillor Merrill, this is within your district.
Yes, I move that the Council of Region of Queens Municipality declare property identified as a portion of PID number 702-60203 as surplus to municipal needs and enter into a purchase and sale agreement with the Queens Care Building Society for the future development of a long-term care facility.
That's seconded by Councillor Gibney. As the public and councillors are aware, there's been much discussion regarding the new replacement of a 112-bed residential slash nursing home, and Queens Place land has been looked at. We had an excellent presentation this morning. I think noteworthy items were the fact that Nova Scotia has a very holistic approach to senior care, and that unlike other provinces, senior care in this province is considered continuing your social life, your normality, connecting to community groups, and the Queen's Place site offered the greatest strength of any site within the South Queens area. It's at grade, it's unique, it will provide meaningful community-based interactions, and I believe the quote was used, delivering life to years. So I know that it's a wonderful site, and I'd like to take this opportunity to allow members of council to express their opinions or thoughts, and I'm sure there's some enthusiasm there as we move forward on this new build that Queens Care Society are doing. So who would like to comment? Councilor Brad.
I think this is great, and I think the committee that we're here presenting to us today gave us some kind of an indication that moving forward with this helps them to move forward with the project and keep costs down by trying to get ahead of inflation. So while it didn't rush us in our decision, it was an indication that they're looking forward to moving forward very quickly, and we can do what we can to bring this project to fruition.
Any other councilors wish to comment? Councilor Fancy?
I believe we have a very capable team, and that's you can start at anything, but if you don't have a capable team, you're in trouble. The government has been more than generous to come forward with this. We've had aging buildings, we have issues and with people having too many people in a place and such as, and I think they're looking to try to rectify most of these situations by this bill. So I think it's a fantastic thing for our community to go forward.
Councilor Charlton?
In the beginning, I was uncertain of this site, but after the presentations we've received from the steering committee and all the contacts and tying the long-term care facility to the community, I can understand why they chose this site, and I think it makes sense, and I'm happy to support it.
Any other comments? And I think that they also made the comment about the generations of people that are going to benefit from a long-term residential care home that's holistic, that blends with community, that connects the community, that is actually a home within a home. So I think this is a good decision that we're going to make. Nothing else to say. I'm going to ask for the question. All those in favor? Contrary? Passed. And on that happy note,